go the reel of the wigs. Loose wig five, side two.
Yeah!
We will book a comedian who will offend everybody. Fair enough? All right, and then we'll get it all over with, you see? A man who will disturb a great many social groups watching right now. Because, I'm serious, his satirical comments refer to many things not ordinarily discussed on television. It serves you right. Now that way, the NBC mail department will know in advance, right? If the complaints are coming in, they hire three or four extra girls, they get the stamp answers ready, we're very sorry, we didn't, you know, that sort of thing. And then the whole thing is handled with neatness and respect. So ladies and gentlemen, here is a very shocking comedian, the most shocking comedian of our time, a young man who is skyrocketing to fame, Lenny Bruce. Here he is.
Will Elizabeth Taylor become Bar Mitzvahed? Continuity, I'll behave myself. I'll do all the lines we rehearsed, you know. That's the thing, you know, I have a reputation for being sort of controversial and irreverent and also the semantic bear trap of bad taste. And actually, I do have, and I will always be accused of bad taste by the people who eat in restaurants, reserve service, you know, that kind of scene too anyway, yeah. But you might be interested in how I became offensive. I started in school with drinking and I was like a real depressed kid, you know, 7, 8 years old, I'd really get juiced and get out of my head. And so the teacher would really get bugged, you know, with me singing and carrying on and calling Columbus a fink and boosting Aaron Burr and all that. They're semantics. They're words that offend me. Let's see, Governor Farbus, segregation offend me. Nighttime television offends me. Some nighttime television. The shows that exploit homosexuality, narcotics, and prostitution under the guise of helping these societal problems.
This complete is now dedicated to all my goals.
Now know that our galaxy is only one of some 100,000 million that can be seen using modern telescopes, each galaxy itself containing some 100,000 million stars. We live in a galaxy that is about 100,000 light years across and is slowly rotating. The stars, in its spiral arms, orbit around its center about once every several 100 million years. Our sun is just an ordinary, average-sized yellow star near the inner edge of one of the spiral arms. We have certainly come a long way since Aristotle and Ptolemy, when we thought that the Earth was the center of the universe.
Good evening, everybody. The wolf is coming in town. You have never seen the wolf.
Alter. When Japan surrendered, the United States was faced with a choice. Either disarm, as we had done in the past, and enjoy the prosperity which comes from releasing so much wealth and energy to the private sector, or we could maintain ourselves on a full military basis, which would mean a tight control not only over our allies and such conquered provinces as West Germany, Italy, and Japan, but over the economic, which is to say the political lives, of the American people. As Charles E. Wilson, a businessman politician of that era, said as early as 1944, instead of looking to disarmament and unpreparedness as a safeguard against war, a thoroughly discredited doctrine, let us try the opposite, full preparedness according to a continuing plan. The accidental President Harry Truman bought this notion. Although Truman campaigned in 1948 as an heir of Roosevelt's New Deal, he also had a continuing plan, but how to impose it. The Republican leadership did not like the state to be the master of the country's economic life, while of the Democrats, only a few geopoliticians like Dean Acheson found thrilling the prospect of a military state to be justified in the name of a holy war against something called communism in general, and Russia in particular. The fact that the Soviet Union was no military or economic threat to us was immaterial. They must seem to be threatening so that the continuing plan could be set in motion in order to create the national security state in which we have been living for the past 40 years.
And all of a sudden he sees this beautiful girl. He stops. He says, "Ooh." He said, "What name?" She says, "Jane." He says, "What whole name?" She says, "Cunt."
I tried last night, all that old night before.
Have a tough time picking up dames, though, in a classy joint like this. I got lines like, "Hi, miss. What's your name?" "Fuck off, bozo." "What, can I buy you a drink, Miss Bozo?" "May I call you fuck off?" "I usually come around with a left hook."
Is it not monstrous that this player here, but in a fiction, in a dream of passion, could force his soul so to his own conceit that from its working all his visage wand, tears in his eyes, distraction in his aspect, a broken voice, and his whole function suiting with forms to his conceit, and all for nothing, for Hecuba? What's Hecuba to him, or he to Hecuba, that he should weep for her? What would he do had he the motive and the cue for passion that I have? He would drown the stage with tears and cleave the general ear with horrid speech, make mad the guilty and appall the free, confound the ignorant and amaze indeed the very faculties of eyes and ears. Yet I, a dull and muddy metalled rascal, peak like John o' Dreams, unpregnant of my cause, and can say nothing. No, not for a king, upon whose property and most dear life a damned defeat was made. Am I a coward? Who calls me villain, breaks my pate across, plucks off my beard and blows it in my face, tweaks me by the nose, gives me the lie, the throat as deep as to the lungs? Who does me this, huh? Swoons, I should take it. For it cannot be, but I am pigeon-livered and lack gall to make oppression bitter. Or, ere this, I should have fatted all the region kites with this slaves, awful, bloody, bawdy villain, remorseless, treacherous, lecherous
spineless villain, vow vengeance! Why? What an ass am I? This is most brave. That I, the son of a dear father murdered, prompted to my revenge by heaven and hell, must like a whore unpack my heart with words and fall a-cursing like a very drab, a scullion. Aye, a paunch. Four.
Off a sign on the dairy section advertising directly to the lesbian community. Milk, $1.98, gal, homo.
He's got like a nutty sense of humor, you know. His name is Paul Coates, and he found out, dig, like there were kids that 8 and 9 years old that were sniffing airplane glue. to get high on, you know, and so I had sort of a fantasy how it happened. The kid is alone in his room, and it's Saturday. The child is played by George McCready. Well, next scene, I'm all alone in the room, and it's Saturday. Mother's away, and what'll I do that's good and hostile? Let's see, I'll make an airplane, that's good. I'll make a Lancaster. Good structural design. I'll get the bolts wood, I'll sand it here. I'll cut that off, I'll get the struts now. Now I'll get an airplane glue, I'll rub it on the rag, and... Here now, it's another plane. I'm getting loaded. Is it possible loaded on airplane glue? Maybe it's just stuffy in here. I'll call my dog over. Flicka. Flicka, come here, darling, and smell this rat. Smell it, you freaky little doggy. Smell that rat, Flicka. Flicka. Flicka! It worked. I'm the Louis Pasteur of junkiedom. I'm out of my skull for tinnitus. Well, there's much work to be done now. Horses' hooves to melt down. Noses to get ready. Cut to the toy store. Any toy store, any hobby shop, might be your kid who walked in that day. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Hello, Mrs. Schindler. Nice store you got here. Give me a nickel's worth of pencils and a big boy tablet and some erasers and 2,000 tubes of airplane glue.
The national security state. Well, it began officially and publicly with the National Security Act of 1947. It began secretly to be operative in January 1950 when the National Security Council produced a blueprint for a new kind of country unlike anything that the United States had ever known before. This document, known as NSC 68 for short, was just declassified only in 1975, commits us to the following program. They made 7 points. First, no negotiations ever with Russia. Second, develop the hydrogen bomb so that when the Russians finally develop an atomic bomb, we would still not have to deal with that enemy without which no national security state can exist. Third, a rapid buildup of conventional forces. Fourth, a large increase in taxes to pay for all this. Fifth, a mobilization of the entire American society to fight this terrible specter, hence Ronald Reagan's finest movie, The Red Menace of 1954. Sixth, a strong alliance system directed by the United States. This became NATO. Seventh, to make the people of Russia our allies in this holy adventure. Hence the justification for all sorts of secret services, in no way responsible to the Congress that funds them, and so in violation of the old Constitution. Needless to say, the blueprint, the continuing plan, was never openly discussed at the time, but one by one, the major political players of the two parties came around. The Republican Senator Vandenberg told Truman that if he really wanted all those weapons and all those high taxes to pay for them, he'd better scare the hell out of the American people. Truman obliged, and so have all his successors, except briefly Eisenhower, who in a belated fit of conscience at the end of his presidency warned us against the military-industrial complex that had, by then, established permanent control over all our lives. The cynicism of this coup d'etat was breathtaking. Officially, we were doing nothing but trying to preserve freedom for ourselves and our allies from a ruthless enemy that was everywhere, monolithic and all-powerful. Actually, the real enemy, if that's the right word, was us for allowing our rulers to hijack the country, to impose military conscription, if only briefly, something unheard of in peacetime, to overthrow governments that did not please them, and finally to keep all but the very rich docile and jittery by imposing, as I once knew from personal experience, income taxes that used to go as high as 90%. That's quite an achievement for a country at peace. So we can date from January 1950 the strict governmental control of our economy and the gradual erosion of our liberties so that this strange new state could control as much as possible everyone everywhere in the economic interest of what is never, to put it tactfully, a very large group. Fortunately, all bad things must end. Our huge indebtedness has made the maintenance of the empire a nightmare. And the day that Japan stops buying treasury bonds, our troops and missiles will all have to come home to a highly restless population, to overdo understatement.
Took that linear passage and you picked notes from that linear passage and then you made vertical structures and went. The idea of practicing is so that when you get to a performance, you know the material so well that you can incorporate all of the victims of the material and create a piece. The idea of practice is so that when you get ready to perform, you forget all of your, all of the strictures, all of the The preparation is the vehicle that allows you to transcend, meaning develop a state of trance, so that when you play, you no longer think of the specifics of technique. You are thinking of having assimilated, digested the material. You are thinking about creating upon the material that you're doing. Of sound is that you no longer have to, I mean, the homage that you pay is to his genius, and what his life meant, the life of Thelonious Monk or Billie Holiday, is that you cannot possibly recreate what they have given, but what you can do is in genuflecting to that genius and loving that genius, learn from it, and for me, the great geniuses that I love only inspire me to want to find my own.
I guess it has ties in with music, doesn't it? The architecture of a piece.
Yeah, well, you know, to construct a piece is perhaps similar to the construction of a building. The enclosing of a particular spatial time element in music is perhaps similar to an architect enclosing us in the space that we walk in, live in, breathe in, think in.
Who are some of them?
Thank you.
play a piece that I am very fond of.
Okay.
Address the very important subject of what the role of government ought to be. And we as libertarians believe the role of government ought to be for the preservation of liberty. Not for welfareism, not to police the world, but to restrict the role of government to the preservation of liberty. Then we can address the subject of the waste and the fraud and the corruption and the welfare. And really, it's a mistake to think poor people get to benefit from the welfare system. It's a total fraud. Most welfare go to the rich of this country, the military-industrial complex, the bankers, the foreign dictators, and it's totally out of control. Thank you. An idea that government has services or goods that they can pass out is a complete farce. Governments have nothing. They can't create anything. They never have. All they can do is steal from one group and give it to another at the destruction of the principles of freedom, and we ought to challenge that concept. There to preserve liberty, to guarantee a free market, to make sure we have a sound currency, but not to get in the business of passing out favors and privileges and redistributing the wealth, bankrupting the country and impoverishing our people and delivering the debt and the problems to the next generation. That's what has to come to an end.
Track. I lost all my money and I started walking home, you know, and the rain started pouring down on me, and pretty soon I was soaked to the skin. And I got to one of the corners and I hit one of those grates and the sole of my shoe came loose, and I'm walking and flopping my foot and walking and flopping my foot like this, and all of a sudden this car pulled up and the window went down and there was Lenny. He said, "What's the matter, George?" I said, "I was at the racetrack and lost all my money." I said, "It's raining on me, I'm soaked to the skin, and look, the sole of my shoe come loose, I'm trying to get back to the hotel." He said, "Don't worry about a thing." He reached in his pocket, and then he pulled out a roll like this. Took the rubber band off and said, "Put this around your shoe, that'll hold you till you get to the hotel." He liked to do things like that.
What the hell? It's Halloween. I go as a ghost. I take a sheet off the bed and I throw it over my head. And I go to the party. And you have to get the picture. I'm walking down the street in a deep southern town. I have a white sheet over my head. And a car pulls up and three guys with white sheets say, "Get in." So I figure there's guys going to the party. as ghosts. And I get into the car, and I see we're not going to the party, and I tell them. And they say, well, we have to go pick up the Grand Dragon. And all of a sudden it hits me, down south, white sheets, the Grand Dragon. I put two and two together. I figure there's a guy going to the party dressed as a dragon. All of a sudden, a big guy enters the car, and I'm sitting there between four Klansmen, four big armed men, and the door's locked, and I'm petrified. I'm trying to pass desperately. You know, I'm saying, you all, and Grits. You know, I must have said Grits 50 times. They ask me a question, I say, oh, Grits, Grits. And next to me is the leader. You can tell he's the leader because he's the one wearing contour sheets. And they drive me to an empty field, and I gave myself away because they asked for donations, and everybody there gave cash. When it came to me, I said, I pledge $50. They knew immediately. They took my hood off and threw a rope around my neck. They decided to hang me. And suddenly my whole life passed before my eyes. I saw myself as a kid again in Kansas, going to school and swimming at the swimming hole and fishing and frying up a mess of catfish. Going down to the general store, getting a piece of gingham for Emmy Lou. And I realize it's not my life. They're gonna hang me in 2 minutes. The wrong life is passing in front of me.
Person can't steal from his neighbor, and we as libertarians say the government can't do the stealing for him either. Therefore, it's up to us to provide for the general welfare, to take care of the general environment, to make sure everybody has an equal opportunity to get a job and work their way out of the situation. It's a
the farther a galaxy is, the farther and faster it is moving away. And that meant that the universe could not be static, as everyone previously had thought, but is in fact expanding. The distance between the different galaxies is growing all the time. The discovery that the universe is expanding was one of the great intellectual revolutions of the 20th century.
Is the arresting officer here? He says, yes. He says, what's this all about? He said, well, this gentleman was swimming on a private beach. He said, was there a sign there? He says, yes, sir. He said, what did the sign say? He said, the sign said, private beach, no swimming allowed. He says, can't you read, sir? Didn't you read the sign? He said, yeah, I read the sign, but dang the way I read it. He said, how'd you read it? He said, the way I read it, private beach, no, swimming allowed.